time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Anand Mohammad Zahid Chaudhry. Specialist Mohammad Zahid Chaudhry is a decorated disabled National Guard member and Army veteran who is facing deportation to Pakistan. His trial comes up this coming next Wednesday. Anand and Mohammad, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
So let's start out. It's a very intense tale. Let's start out with Mohammad. How did you end up in the U.S. military?
Well, I had a really heartfelt conversation once or a few times with my dad, and he says, "Zahid, if that's what your convictions are, you should go and serve the country you love." So I said, "Okay, sure. I love United States, and when I say United States, it's the people." It's the wonderful people I have met. I have laughed together, cried together, just like the Army, you know, and I found humanity here, really, in its most purest and, you know, raw forms, and so wonderful. So, yeah, why not? I wanted to serve, but we need to put ourselves way back before 9/11, because I joined before 9/11, and it wasn't a patriotic thing to do at that time, or it wasn't very popular. And I joined first, I didn't join U.S. Army first and foremost in active duty status. I actually joined National Guard. And National Guard was there to be available at the state level, not just for Washington State, but outside if it's need be, for fires, for floods, mudslides, and all those things. And since I have always, all my life, I've done volunteer work and I love to do that. So I said, sure, why not? That's so wonderful, you know. So, yeah, that's how I joined it.
Mike, it was an extension of his community and civic volunteer work throughout our community where we lived in eastern Washington, where he was with the Red Cross and the fire department and just committing a lot of thousands of hours for his for that community service. So it was really extension of that as well.
All right. And eventually, that blossomed into your being in the Army? Is that correct?
Well, yeah. Well, the 9/11 happened, and then, you know, things got changed. National Guard used to be mostly available for stateside, for the governor and for other natural disasters. But then, today, it gets deployed more than even active duty units. We know that. Lots of things have changed. It is very hard to think what the world was before and what it is now. It is quite different on all so many levels. We're talking about reserves, we're talking about National Guard, we're talking about active duty Army. So yes, whenever I try to start a college, you know, I get a call from Uncle Sam. You gotta go. I was activated for Operation Iraqi Freedom, which I served. So yeah.
All right, and you are also decorated.
Surely. Surely.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I joined the Army, I was so naive, and I believed everything what I was told. So you should always volunteer for everything. So I was sort of a Forrest Gump sort of thing, you know. So I volunteered for everything what was, you know, put before me. Because in the Army, they tell you can be all what you want to be. But then what they don't tell you that, you know, the perception of your name or the prefix, Muhammad in this case, or something else can make all the difference. So nobody told me that, but we have both gone through it and seen that firsthand. How it feels like, how it's like. So, yeah, I was a class leader at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I was a platoon sergeant in the training for 6 months over there about. And I was also a base sergeant and also the leader of the drill team. And our drill team, of course, always won. And class leader, and we did extremely well. And, and the garrison side and the facility side, I was the base sergeant, and we were the most squared away platoon. And I took care of, I used to get up way, way, way early in the morning, make sure I woke up all my four squad leaders and took care of them and their soldiers and everything else. And I did the best I could. But what happened is that while I was so far away in Texas in 2002, my wife at her work in Eastern Washington was being harassed by FBI. They will come show badges. She was working for Yakima State Fair, Yakima Fairgrounds. It has changed name a few times. And, you know, and our teenage daughter was harassed at home when nobody was home by FBI. So, I mean, this harassment, this intimidation goes a very, very, very long way. And they say if you keep prodding even a dog or a cat for a long enough time, you will get a reaction out of it one day. And hopefully that's what some bureaucrats are, because they have bungled up and created this mess, that now they have to save face, and perhaps that's what they're counting on, that we will go postal or do something silly, and then they can justify their action. See? We told you so. See? We told you so. So that's what is happening. So it is so sad that when a soldier is serving, you know, thousands of miles away in a different state, you know, I mean, his wife is harassed at her work, and their teenager daughter at their home when none of them is home. So this is just so sad.
So you've been here in the U.S. for at least 13 years, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes,
and 2001, you became a permanent legal resident.
Yes.
When did you start pursuing becoming a U.S. citizen?
2003, yes. And then we've been told so many lies, it's just amazing. One time in an immigration office in Yakima, we were told they lost our file. What happened?
And then the officer dropped this big, thick file on the tabletop, and we said, well, that's our file. You just told us that was lost. And he said, yeah, what are you going to do about it? He just had a really nasty attitude about the whole thing. And they lost our original 2003 application for citizenship as well. So it just continues on and on.
So 2004, I think I applied based on qualified military service, which was supposed to be expedited. And I had people with me, soldiers, like so. And this is a news clip from Tacoma News Tribune, dated Thursday, February 12, 2004. The headline is From Illegal Immigrant to U.S. Soldier to Citizen. And it's about a Private Juan Escalante. And even though he came to this country illegally, he was given his...
On a fake $50 green card.
in this case of this private. And then he got his citizenship. What a month or so. But in my case, you know, I came here into this country. There are a few facts which makes the American public mad today, not to mention the veteran groups. Number one, I have always come here to this country legally in the last 14 plus years. I have never broken any U.S. law ever. I'm married to a U.S. citizen, which I also qualify for citizenship. This month actually is our 10th anniversary.
Yeah, congratulations.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
And I applied for a qualified military service, which was supposed to be expedited, but that never was. Because I saw some people, and it was a Friday, and they say, oh, and they fill out the form on Friday and in the military. And then on Saturday, they said, oh, we're having a ceremony tomorrow. Can you come in? And next day, they were given their citizenship certificate. From filling out a form to that, it was sometimes as quick as that. Other times, it can take a week or two, a month, you know, something like that. But with me, it was taking years and years and years. So eventually we applied, we did a mandamus, a writ of mandamus or something like that is called, and we took action against, we asked them to make a decision because our name was...
Zahid's name was in the name check, Luke, for years and years and years, and we were not getting anywhere with that. So we were always told, well, what's going on with our processing? Oh, you're in the name check loop. You're in the name check loop. And so we filed the writ of mandamus against the USCIS, and kind of tit for tat, then they did give him the citizenship test, which he aced, and then they still denied him citizenship and then put him into deportation hearing.
So you understand that before I was only a legal permanent resident, I could live here forever, but they were just delaying. They're using delaying tactics not to give me my citizenship. But I was not in a deportation proceedings. But now, to save face, they have, you know, tightened up several notches and say, okay, now because you did that, you know, you're trying to bring it to our attention or other people's attention, they put us in deportation proceedings. Can you believe that?
And we say us. in deportation proceedings because I didn't get married to live apart from him. So if Zahid is deported, I am deported basically as well.
And they want to deport you
to
Pakistan.
Where I haven't lived for like nearly two decades, you know, something like that. It's been a very long time, and countries and things can change within a few years. I mean, it is very clear from the what I heard and hear and from the news and the people who give me telephone calls that not just America is going backward. Pakistan is too. I mean, this is the new Rome, and we are the new Romans. So whatever the Rome did, the rest of the countries follow. So here what is happening is that they're regressing back, really, in civil rights and everything else. And now I visited, you know, sometimes on grandma's funeral and some other things. But I haven't lived there for a very, very, very long time. But what is critical is that they want to deport me to supposedly a country we are in a proxy war with. Okay, I mean, the people are very upset over there because of drone attacks. And that will be very bad because the extremist elements will try to make example out of somebody like me who has served the United States so well. And
I would be very angry with somebody who's now living over there that served in the U.S. military.
And I served not only the U.S. military and National Guard, but also served the community so well. You know, thousands of volunteer hours for American Red Cross, fire department. I used to carry a pager 24/7, respond to emergency calls at all hours of day and night. And Habitat for Humanity and other things. And then, of course, they will try to make an example out of me if I go there, so especially now this case is, you know, last year this case was in 29 newspapers. So now it's just, you know, we are in a point of, we are between a rock and a hard stone.
And you have a hearing coming up this Wednesday that is
yes,
pretty critical.
Yes, we have a hearing that's coming up Wednesday. We have a Keep Zahid Home rally to stop the deportation of a decorated disabled veteran. Lots of community members and friends and neighbors and veterans are going to be showing up to support us in this rally. And we hope to get representatives from the senator's offices and other important offices just to bring this to the attention of the American people. And
that rally is going to be noontime this
Wednesday. The
rally
will be noon to 1 at 1000 2nd Avenue, downtown Seattle.
Corner of Spring and 2nd.
Corner of Spring and 2nd.
Outside the Seattle Immigration Court Building.
Yes.
Which is at 1 o'clock is then when your hearing will be.
The 1 o'clock, right? Yes, 1 o'clock is the hearing.
And are citizens allowed into the hearing? Do you know?
I guess so. I mean, everything should be.
We'll find out.
It's American legal system. So it was supposed to be the American government. I mean, government of the people, by the people, for the people. We will find out if it really is. More details.
Yes, we can. You can get in touch with us at keepzahidhome@gmail.com. That's keepzahidhome@gmail.com. And also a website at keepzahidhome.org. And check us out on the Facebook, which is Keep Zahid Home.
It's also on a Flickr and a Twitter, Keep Zahid Home. And the thing is, Keep Zahid Home is a campaign, a grassroots campaign. It's basically our neighbors and friends and family and support group, which is really upset that this could not be happening. Because the thing is, after this injustice is done, our government can spend billions upon billions upon billions of dollars in foreign aid or for something else. It would not repair our tarnished image in the whole world, because history is being written right now. The world is watching whatever we're doing. So I think it's very critical that we make this right now rather than later on, which, you know, tens of billions of dollars would not repair the tarnished image of United States here or abroad.
You were injured while serving in the military. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I was serving whatever I can remember, because I take, 30 different medications?
Lots of medications.
for my pain and my migraines and other things. At that time in 2003, I think I was deployed for Operation Iraqi Freedom, and lots of things were happening. And I remember some things in line of duty while serving. Wonderful nation of ours. I had some injuries, and other ones I have no idea. I don't remember. But what was a turning point for me, or what was really profound for me when I started doing funerals of my own soldiers? I mean, 1, 2, 3. I think I remember what did about 7 funerals after that. Every single funeral tore me apart. Every single funeral made me ask more questions. I mean, it was just, I cannot describe that. I don't have words to describe those feelings, or even to give listeners a view of what a soldier goes through, because your fellow soldiers are your brothers and sisters. You play with them and you train with them, you spend months and whatever, and then you laugh and cry together. That's the family. And then one day, you're doing their funeral. I mean, it's just,
it tore him apart. It broke his heart. He couldn't even talk to me when those funerals would happen. I would try to talk him through it, and he was just devastated by that. And had his injuries in service to this country not prevented him to further his career in the military, he would still be doing funerals today.
Yeah, the other day we were at my military hospital, and they had several soldiers' bodies were coming. So, yeah, that's what we're going through. I mean, I understand we are warriors. We are American warriors. We are the finest military force. If not the finest, we are one of the finest in the world. But, there are lots of other questions which surround that issue. So anyway, there's a guilt which comes with it, that I didn't die, my soldiers die, and lots of other things. It's just hard to describe.
Are you receiving good military care? Are you getting support from the VA?
Well, VA has a reputation, as you probably know.
Can we say Walter Reed?
So Walter Reed was not the only thing. It was happening all over the country. I mean, we should know that it was not an isolated event. But I have hope. I'm always optimistic that we will one day, we are not there yet, but we will one day take care of our veterans better. And VA healthcare system will be more responsive and will actually focus on not facilities or contracts on how to spend the VA funds, but rather taking care of fellow veterans. That'll be a good shift. So, yeah.
You were volunteering at many things. One of the things I believe you tried to hook up with was the Yakima Police Department on a volunteer basis. And that, from my reading, that kind of sounds like when everything went south, so to speak.
Yeah, that was the biggest mistake. They didn't say that, we won't take anybody from a disenfranchised groups in the community, or we won't take a Muslim, or we won't, take a person. Yeah, so anyway, that was the thing. Lieutenant Gary Ballas is known for his racist remarks. He has said it on record that, what did he say? We didn't kill enough Japanese.
Didn't kill enough Japanese in World War II. He has calls Hispanics wetbacks or beaners and or beaners. And
you don't want to know what he calls Muslims or Native Americans, for that matter. But he was the judge, jury, and executioner for Yakima police officer. Wonderful, great, awesome police officer, Tony Ramos. And 2003, 2004, I think, little city of Yakima spent over $500,000 trying to protect his behind, or try to protect him from the bad things he's done. And then Washington Patrol?
Washington State Patrol
carried out an investigation of that instance and other things on Gary Ballas, but it was never released in Yakima or published in Yakima papers. So, yeah. So all those things, and he's still working, and in charge of the, he was in charge of volunteers, so unpaid volunteers. And he was also in charge at times on and off, mostly for the record section. And he said in his deposition July last year that in his 27-year history, the only documents which have gone missing from his care are my file, my complete file. So they were sitting on those documents where I said quite clearly in the lie detector test, I had more lie detector tests than I could ever remember or want to remember, that I have said it, that I am not a U.S. citizen, I'm a legal permanent resident, and in due course I would get my citizenship very soon. But supposedly and the department had known that very well, and the government has known that very well, that I have said that in interview. But that was a document which was missing, which I have said it clearly time and again, that I'm not a citizen, I'm a legal permanent resident. But now on the application, there was a little checkbox which I left empty, and now the people can imagine very well somebody who might have a motive, a racist motive, an extra grind, might have put a, you know, somebody could have put a check mark in. And then a check mark only says that if some employees of Yakima City needs to be citizens, and if we ask you, would you provide that documentation? It didn't say that I claim to be U.S. citizen, or it didn't say that I am a U.S. citizen. No, nothing to do with the fact. Even if I put that check mark, it will be fine. But I did not put the check mark. I left that blank, as the signature experts have said that. And that is one of the reasons in my deportation hearing on Wednesday. Oh, he claimed to be a U.S. citizen. I never did. I never have. And even if I put a check mark in that, it doesn't say that I am claiming to be U.S. citizen, or yes, I am, or anything to that effect. So it is, that shows you the desperateness. That shows you how desperate the other side is to save their faces. I mean, this mess, this bureaucratic mess, how desperate they are to make this very simple case complex, or to how to paint us with a tar brush. They have sent, last year, they have sent trial attorneys from Washington, D.C. just for our case in Yakima. Okay, and if you...
Millions of taxpayer dollars has been spent on our case alone, wasted on our case, and people should be very, very angry about that.
I mean, so people ask me again and again, do you feel like a victim? If there is a victim, it is American public. It is our Constitution. If there is a victim, it is the American taxpayer dollars which are used to carry out this injustice.
And you've seen no change in their pursuit of you with the new administration, the Obama administration coming in. There was no change via the Justice Department.
Nothing whatsoever. So.
And initially, you had, when you had applied to the police department and they had done a background check, and an FBI agent had okayed you, had given you a good review, and then apparently this.
Yes.
Yes, it is quite amazing. I think my second or third, or I was invited back into the Yakima FBI offices. And I went there voluntarily because, you know, there was nothing formal, no warrants or anything. So I went there. I wanted to cooperate. I was the person when lots of people contacted me after 9/11 and said, hey, can you speak that Urdu or, you know, language? Or I said, sure, I do. He said, why don't you call them? And, you know, dumb and naive enough, I called FBI offices local and said, if you ever need help with translation or anything, I will be glad to help you out. So I have done. I have volunteered myself time and again. Not in the U.S. Army and National Guard and even in the community, you know, outside of American Red Cross, Fire Department, Habitat for Humanity and other things. Even, you know, and I did that because people asked me and I didn't know any better. Then you wonder why they have to pay $250,000 bonus for somebody who speaks Pashto. Because the people who are in the United States and who speak Pashto, they know that if they will be set up for failure either, or they will pay a heavy price for taking up that job. And the government, which wants them to have a job, would not even stand behind them when they do that. So that's why. That's why the bonus have kept going up, now to $250,000 to somebody who speaks Pashto. So, you know, why? There's a reason behind it. Because we don't, we make promises and we do not stand behind us. And when we say we mean the U.S. government. So, Sorry, my memory is bad. I don't know what you just asked a moment earlier. I forgot.
Your FBI interview.
Okay,
in
yeah.
Office.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is I went to that Yakima FBI office, and they will ask me a question, and I will answer it. And then FBI special agent, what was your name?
David Hendricks.
David Hendricks will say, you know, hey, see, I told you, this is a good guy. Because the other guys were, I don't know where they came from. Washington, D.C. or whatever, they had no badges. They would not tell me their name or would not give me their business card or anything. But once the David Hendricks said it second or third time, see, I told you, he's a good guy. I could not believe this was his office. They ordered him out of his own office. So that tells you it was coming from somewhere very high up. So, I mean, David Hendricks was ordered out of his own office when he said that several times. See, I told you, he's a good guy. So this tells you the people who actually do the work, you know, and when they say and they stand up for something injustice, or they say, you know, they should stop now, enough is enough. This is what happened. But this is not only thing. I mean, intimidation and harassment goes beyond that level. Not only when I was 1,000 miles away and my wife was harassed at her work and my child was harassed at home alone, a teenage daughter. It is also that there used to be cars. Crown Victorias and
Crown Victorias parked outside our home.
For months and months and months, for years. Because what they want is to create a pressure on you that you go postal or you go something silly, and then they can justify all their actions. So, and it has never stopped. It just goes away for a few months and then it comes back up again. And, you know, phone is tapped, mail, our U.S. mail is
opened.
Yeah, opened, or we don't get it because we only know.
There are things that we know should come in the mail, and they never, ever arrived. So, you know, we knew that somebody was, you know, delaying it and waylaying it. And
or we're not getting it.
Not getting it completely. And this, we've been followed by these cars. They are not unmarked. Mm-hmm. They are marked. And this is even happening.
They were unmarked. They didn't have
some
any.
Of them were unmarked, yes. Yeah, but some I mean, of them are, yeah. Some, I mean, not markings as to
okay,
as
they,
to what okay, department they, or agencies they no, work okay, for, but yeah. I mean, their license plates are
normal.
Normal.
They're normal.
They're normal.
So they're not marked.
And this has happened just even up until recently in our Lacey home, mm-hmm. August, September, October, even mm-hmm. into November. Mm-hmm. This is still happening.
Unfortunately, we are just about out of time. We're talking with Ann and Mohammed Zahid Chaudhry, are facing deportation to Pakistan, and you have a rally and a hearing coming up on Wednesday. Can you give people details on that again?
The rally is Wednesday, January 12, noon to 1. It is at 1000 2nd Avenue, downtown Seattle, the corner of Spring and 2nd, and we're just asking people to show up. If you're a veteran, please show up in military uniform if you wish. That would be great and awesome. And you can check us out on Keep Zahid Home Facebook page. Email keepzahidhome@gmail.com. Website www.keepzahidhome.org.
And you can also check out the old website. It's justiceforchaudhry.info. Justice, numeral 4 or digit 4, not F-O-R 4, digit 4, and Justice for Chaudhry, chaudhry.info, and you can see the video or the Facebook old Facebook page, Justice for Chaudhry, Justice space 4 space Chaudhry, and you can see all the videos of my speech in Washington, D.C. at the Interfaith Forum, and also at the Asian American API campaign.
It's our issue too.
It's our issue too. Thank you. My memory is not that good. Video here in Seattle also, and all other things. So yes, please, if you have any questions, give us a call. And we would love to have your moral support and solidarity on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, from 12 to noon. Thank you so very much.
Write senators, write Janet Napolitano, write to Eric Holder. Get angry.
Well, it's actually Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, and Attorney General Eric Holder can just make it right. Just make it right. They don't have to. They have the authority. They or higher can actually just make it right. Just they have the discretion, and in their signature, they can just make it right, and this all injustice and everything can go away, and we can make it right, and we can move forward.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of time. I want to thank you both for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.